This episode of the Meme Factory podcast is sponsored by Simply Bitcoin. This is a Bitcoin-only daily show. Check them out at youtube.com/simplybitcoin. And we are sponsored by CryptoCloaks. CryptoCloaks strives for quality products and innovative solutions for your Bitcoin signing devices and Bitcoin nodes. Check out the Yellow Edition MK4 cold card case at CryptoCloaks.com. Enjoy the show.
Bitcoiner first. Imagine American.
If Pedro is running our stream, does that mean that we still have the ads at the start, or do we just go straight in?
It means that every once in a while we need to ask Pedro a question that we know he can't answer.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
What's that?
So we are live. Welcome everybody. Welcome in. You made it to another episode of the Meme Factory stream test. There's Big Sean. This evening we are joined by Lawrence Leopard. Larry, say hi.
Hello. How are you? Good to be with you guys.
Good to have you tonight. So Larry really doesn't need much of an introduction. He gained notoriety as a gold bug over the years, runs EMA, Equity Management Associates, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And in recent years has become a staunch advocate of Bitcoin. Does that sound about right, Larry?
That's about right. Yeah, and I'll be out of the gold business eventually. I'm just trending in that direction. But I was in it for a long time, so it's hard to just throw it away.
Yeah, I hear you. Now,
before Bitcoin existed, gold was the only alternative, right?
That's true. So, really appreciate you making time to be with us tonight. You had you'd mentioned something on Twitter a couple weeks ago about who had China implosion on their bingo card.
Yeah,
and that made me think it was maybe a good impetus for a discussion. But before we break into any of that. One of the idiosyncrasies of our show, and I totally butchered that word, is that our sponsors require the guest to read the ad copy. So I emailed that to you a little while ago. If you could run through it.
I'll read this. This is a very important and timely ad copy because, as some of you know, my Twitter account got hacked. I was complicit in the hacking because I'm, as my daughter says, Dad, you're an idiot. I got pissed. I got fished. They were trying to sim swap me. But anyway, here's the ad. Hey, it's Larry here. And this episode of the Meme Factory stream test is brought to you by BIPS, B-I-P-S, the Boomer Identity Protection Service. This is very relevant. From SusCorp's Identity Services Division. Ever wish to refresh who you are on social media? Well, maybe reclaim that Twitter handle from the original abyss? Well, SusCorp's got you covered. With their extensive library of covertly borrowed identities, they probably have yours ready for you for resale to you. And that's kind of what I did. I had a tag guy to get back on Twitter. Now, this is an open market operation with both buy and sell side liquidity, sporting a no questions asked return policy in a limited time. If you send them one identity, they'll send you back two. Because why limit yourself to just one version of you? SusCorp Identity Services, doubling your online presence, one borrowed identity at a time. Very relevant in today's world. As my daughter said, don't ever, Dad, Google would never email you or text you, but I didn't know that. And I was being attacked and SIM swapped and everything else. And I got something from Gmail. It said, you're under attack. We can secure your account. Call us immediately. I did. They said, just tell us that authorization code that's coming through on your phone. And I was like, I did that and boom. They had my email, then they had my Twitter, then it created all kinds of trouble. So don't be stupid. Don't do that. But there was a trigger event. I was getting all kinds of stuff where they were attacking a lot of things. And so I was vulnerable to the notion that when Gmail reached out and said, you're being attacked, we can help you. I thought, oh, okay, good. I'll call those guys. Not realizing it was not them. So,
less accent on the other end.
When you call them, was it like an Indian guy?
No. It was, so they were pretty smart about it. It was an Atlanta number. They answered and he said, Google Gmail customer service. This is, Joe. Can I help you? And I said, yep, you just sent me a text message. My account's under attack. Said, oh, yeah, a lot of that happening. Let us help you. What's your email? Who are you? What's your email? Great. I'm going to send you an authentication code on your 2FA. Just read that code back to me. you dumb fuck. And the next thing you know, I was screwed. So, yeah, don't do that.
Definitely not. Well, we're glad to have you back. We
Thank you.
appreciate you going through that
Thanks.
ad read because that's where we make the most money on this show. Now, the next segment is equally as important. We're gonna have to run over to Becca to go through your sandwich order. She's got a menu prepared for you.
Yeah, Larry, thanks for joining us. So I prepared a sandwich menu for you this evening. I got three specials on here. So our first special I have is the fact-checked sandwich. This is a handmade sandwich by convicted criminal Christine Lagarde with meat from 2014, because we know the ECB likes to use data sets from 2014. And it's covered in salty tears from European central bankers. And our second special that I have, it's the quote, I bought this 2,000 square foot bungalow with one paycheck and seven raspberries in 1964.
Yeah.
The boomer special. And this sandwich inflates in value every year for your benefit. And last but not least, our house special, Yellow's Don't Stop Believing steak sandwich. It's been marinated in Red Bull for 836 days. And Yellow's got his I'm gonna fix Bitcoin hat on this week. So,
Yeah,
Larry, these
generally
are the
speaking,
three sandwiches that I've prepared.
nice, Becca. I think I generally support yellow, but I got to go with a fact checked because there's a lot of saltiness coming out of the ECB today, as we all saw on Twitter. It's just stunning. I mean, only central bankers could be, as I said in one of the tweets, could be that galactically stupid.
Yeah, agreed. Good
It's
choice.
just unbelievable, right? And it's indicative of how scared they are and how much trouble they know they're in, that they're so aggressively attacking Bitcoin. And I think there's really a Streisand effect here. The more they attack it, the more people kind of go, oh, maybe I should check into this a bit more, right? So
Exactly.
yeah, it's all good.
Bitcoin stays winning.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, it looks like we've got a question from Rusty. Rusty, you've got your hand up. What's going on, man?
Yeah, hey everyone. Hey Lawrence. I know before we kind of covered it already, but those NFTs you were promoting, so they're not valuable. That's sweet. Just so I can.
They worked out for you? Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah.
I talked to some really sophisticated white, what they call them is white hat hackers, guys who are super good hackers, but they're on the good guy side. And they said if you clicked on that link that was my pinned tweet and you had any kind of a crypto wallet on your phone, it would figure out how to get in there and clean your wallet out. I don't know if that's true. I think you probably would have had to click on your wallet and maybe try and participate in something they were doing. But that's the scam. The reason they attacked me is I have 160 some odd thousand followers, and they figured if, even if only five of them fell for it and they could drain their wallets, well, that's money in their pocket. So yeah, it's unfortunate. And I know there's a lot of that. A couple of these guys just told me horror stories of people who've really, really gotten, very badly taken on some of this stuff. So obviously a message to all of us to be careful.
Self-custody isn't easy, but it's like a thing we all must learn how to do probably as best as we can, I guess.
Yeah, I mean it's and to be fair, I mean I think older people get preyed on more than younger people. I think younger people are more technologically savvy and aware of phishing and all the different issues that go on. I mean, I know my mother, others who are older are very susceptible to falling for, people imposters and fake emails, fake texts, all kinds of stuff, right? So
I feel also we're like a little bit more cynical
Well,
I
there's
think,
that too. There's
yeah.
that. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
Cautious, yeah.
Larry, one of the things I appreciate about your takes is that you've been a sound money advocate for a very long time at this point.
Yeah, I'm old.
And one of the things I like about that is that you tend not to get into the more FOMO-y aspects of the Bitcoin Twitter sphere. So
Yeah, but
the
I'm really bullish on the price.
I know we'll get
Yeah,
there. But
but I don't sit there and I don't call out every $1,000 like some people.
hey,
Yeah. 100K by having party day.
maybe.
I hope so. And I actually that would probably be my prediction, but we'll see.
Really? 100K by having party day.
Well, let's see, having party day is what is that? I don't know. That might be hard. How far away are we, Sean? It's not
April
that
3rd
far,
through
right?
the
It's a
5th
month.
is the
Yeah,
average.
April. Yeah, I think
April.
that's gonna actually I think that's gonna be tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe needs another couple weeks.
Yeah, for the
Yeah.
having.
Yeah. I don't
A
know. I
having
mean,
day.
yeah.
Oh,
It's
Rusty's gonna have to interrupt us. He's got a question here. Go ahead, Rusty.
Yeah, no, I just noticed, probably, I don't know if everyone noticed, but the dog just left the room
Yeah.
and in Lawrence's house. It was like, I felt like it was, oh shit, he's gonna talk about gold again. I'm out.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what's happening there?
I've got two dogs, and you can kind of see if you look over my one shoulder, you can kind of see the beds on the floor there, which is where they sleep. And actually, yeah, they both, yeah, the dog probably got tired of listening to me. So either that or my wife is over in the other room. He might have been going over there to try and get some food. So, because she gives him
Larry,
treats.
what made you make the because you've been into Bitcoin for a while. I think if I remember correctly, you bought some Bitcoin in 2013.
Yeah, that's
But I
right.
remember, even I remember watching you on, I think I first started hearing about you probably in 2020 or so when you were going on the Kaiser Report with Max and Stacy. And I
Yeah.
remember watching you on that a lot. And at that time, it seemed like you were still more focused on gold than Bitcoin.
I
What kind of
was.
made you flip the switch to like, hey, actually,
Yeah.
Bitcoin is really the thing?
It's a great question, Sean. I mean, so I had this legacy business, which I couldn't just abandon. I had a bunch of customers and people who were in the gold business. And yeah, obviously I've been an investor in gold since, 2000 and really even before that. But and the fund was focused on it since 2008 when I got radicalized for sound money, after the GFC. And
Yeah.
you were right, I bought Bitcoin in 2013. My fear with Bitcoin was always that the technology wouldn't be sound enough to really truly be immutable sound money. I mean, if you recall, if you look at the etymology of the whole Bitcoin and how it was developed, there were a lot of attempts to do cryptological gold or cryptological money that failed. You know what I mean? And so even, in 2013, and I think I've said this, told this story, I used to go to these MIT Bitcoin meetups and a couple of core developers there. And I would sit and talk with these guys. I'd say, guys, is this, and I had some money in it, obviously. I was putting more in. I said, guys, this stuff sound. And I mean, they were honest with me. They said, well, yeah, kind of, but we're not 100% sure, And I was kind of like, all right, how are you going to put millions of dollars in something where the tech isn't 100% certain? And this was before the block wars and before, SegWit, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And, and so I think my confidence in it has grown as, the number of blocks have grown, the number of problems have gotten solved, the back doors have gotten closed. World-class engineers like Saylor and Preston come along and support it. And I always kind of knew it was potentially the fastest horse in the race, but I mean, I kind of probably thought that was possible in 2020. Now I think it's just obvious. So I think, I just got more deeply orange-pilled over time, with each price run, with each development in the technology, with the people joining into it. I mean, it's just, it's now to me, it's kind of become overwhelming. And arguably, it's even lower risk, even though the price is much higher than way back then. And I bought a bunch of coins at, 5,000 and 1,000 and all kinds of different lower numbers. It's arguably lower risk now, even though you're paying a lot more for it, because so many of the problems have been worked out. And so as a result of that taking place, I've made it pretty publicly clear. I will sooner or later be out of the gold business entirely, probably. But I think there's probably still one more bite in the apple, and some of the gold miners are silly in terms of their undervaluation. And the remaining case for gold is that, you know, we are going to face a sovereign debt crisis and a monetary reset of some form. And it's likely that the central banks, when they try and do that, aren't going to be ready to turn to Bitcoin. They're going to turn to gold first. And that, therefore, there will be kind of a one-time step function move in gold that, you know, those of us who are in it will be glad we're still in it at that point in time. But, you know, setting that aside, in the much longer run, Bitcoin will demonetize it and, you know, it's going to win, clearly. And I've made it very clear publicly that, you know, in terms of my personal investable assets, I'm half gold, half Bitcoin, which I think is a nice mix because the Bitcoin is much more upside, but more volatile. And the gold is, you know, not nearly as much upside, but it doesn't go down 70%, you know, on a drawdown. So, and that, you know, as you get older, you've got to be a little bit more risk averse because you don't have as much time to have your assets recover. So, but you're right, Sean, I've gotten more and more deeper and deeper into it as I've learned more, seen more, become more and more convinced. I mean, and I think there are a lot of people like that. I think a lot of gold bugs are in the same boat, and there's some that were just convincing. I mean, I love the fact this Chris Irons guy, who's, you know, quote the Raven, been a friend for a long time. He was a real hardcore gold guy, and I've orange pilled him.
Congratulations, by the way, because he used to be a Bitcoin hater.
Yeah, it's not that big of an accomplishment. He's a very smart guy. And, you know, I knew he would eventually get it. And I think everybody kind of, if they open their mind up, get their ego out of the way, I mean, that you eventually get it. And once you get it, you can't unsee it. And then you just kind of keep going with it. And it's, you know, it becomes self-reinforcing. So,
would you say that Bitcoin is more of an ego test for gold bugs than anything else?
Yeah, I think it is, actually. I mean, the gold bugs and the Bitcoin people, you know, we got the same thesis. We're all Austrians. We think the government's out of control. Yeah. I mean, that's why it always angered me a little bit. And I really revere Michael Saylor, but it always angered me when he called gold the enemy, because I didn't think he was doing Bitcoin any favors there, because I thought, you know, these gold bugs are your best possible converts. Don't piss them off. Do you know what I mean? Explain to them that they're not the enemy. They're just guys who haven't understood Bitcoin yet. They're actually the easiest to convert because they get the notion, you know, of monetary debasement loud and clear. They just have got the wrong tool. And so, you know, that's, and I've kind of viewed myself, I feel like my role in this whole revolution is to, you know, because I'm a bit older and I come from a gold background, is to bring the gold guys along. I mean, I go to gold shows and give speeches about why they've got to pay attention to Bitcoin. You know, and because I think they're, you know, I feel sorry for the guys who don't get it. I was like, well, guys, you're missing the boat. You got the thesis right. You're just, you know, you're in the tired asset versus the growing asset. You gotta take, I mean, it's fine. Don't sell all your gold, but sell some of it and get some Bitcoin allocation, right? And a lot of them have done that. A lot of them have followed me. I mean, in the more recent shows I've been to, I usually ask a show of hands and say, these are all hardcore gold people, right, at a gold show. How many of you guys own Bitcoin? About half of them do. You know, and mm-hmm. Maybe they start off with a small allocation, but then they learn more, they read more, they see it working. I mean, one of the things, yeah, you know, I'm 50-50, but I didn't start off at 50-50. I mean, part of it's because I might have been at, you know, 1080 or 1090, but the Bitcoin went up 5x and gold didn't. And so suddenly I'm at 50-50.
So now it's not a store of value, according to Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Oh,
right?
I know. where they get these people, I mean, you know, they're just, yeah. I mean, the beautiful thing about social media is it really allows people with big degrees, big names, big power, you know, all this, to just show how completely stupid they are. I mean, as I like to say, galactically stupid. I mean, there was that woman, Samantha LeDuc, was on Twitter a month or so ago, you know, trying to claim that the supply of Bitcoin was not limited because there was an unlimited number, you know, because you could take the Satoshis and divide them up into billions of them, right? And I was like, at that point, I was just like, I mean, she's a commentator on CNBC and Bloomberg, and, you know, she's like, take her seriously in the finance world, right? And I'm like, this woman is fucking stupid. I mean, she's just incredible. I mean, if she can't understand a 21 million hard cap dividable into, you know, 100 million Satoshis per, I, you know, where do you start? I mean, I was like, I can't believe this, right? But yet, you know, I mean, Ross Sorkin is another good one. I don't know where he went to school, but he's another one of these privileged elites, lives in New York, works for CNBC, you know, writes books, fine. And he's an idiot. He doesn't get it. So Some people get it and hate it. I mean, the Jamie Dimons of the world, they get it, but they're just down on it because it's threatening their, you know, their franchise, their skim. You know, I mean, they're fiat lords, and they're getting rich off fiat, and they want to oppose it. You know, I mean, another good example of that is Elizabeth Warren. So
Lawrence, if I may, a personal question. Like, you seem like a disciplined kind of guy, and you seem like you did good for yourself. Like, I'm curious, like, what drives you? Like, why are you still, like, you know, like, what is, like, the thing that makes you go to podcasts, to a bunch of, like, memers and spread the word? Like, what drives you?
Yeah, so, you know, I kind of feel like I'm in the right place at the right time. I've been a sound money advocate for a long time. And, you know, as you get older and you get, you know, making money is not the biggest thing, and you're kind of focused on your legacy a little bit. You know, I'm 66, so what you want to do is you want to be around a long time, which is why I exercise like crazy to try and extend my life's you know, span. And then you also want to leave a decent legacy. And so, you know, the thing to me, I mean, I look at the country, I look at what's wrong with the country. It's not the country I grew up in. It was a much better country when I was a kid. And I look at what's wrong with it, and it's, you know, to me, the money is obviously broken, and that's the cause of the problems. And so, you know, I don't think there are enough people out there saying that. And, you know, being a guy who's invested in it, knows it, has understood it since, you know, the early 1980s, you know, and has hated Keynesianism and the fiat lifestyle for all that period of time, and made a lot of personal choices, by the way, that were not to my economic benefit, but were doing what I thought was right, which is being involved in sound money. You know, to me, it's kind of a crusade, because I want my kids and my grandkids to live in a better world and to know that, you know, I was fighting for what was a system that would be a better system, which I think is inevitably going to emerge, probably, you know, whether I do podcasts or not. But, but, you know, and then also as kind of an investor, you know, I feel like it's I have somewhat of a duty to advocate for this, to, you know, help my investment clients, and to also warn other people who see the same things I see. You know, the system really is terribly broken, and this whole blue-red thing, that's not going to solve it. We got to solve it by, you know, getting back to sound money. I mean, my byline on Twitter, you guys all know this, is fix the money, fix the world, which I stole from Marty Bent, by the way. But, you know, we got to fix the money, and we will. I mean, it's going to break on its own, and then, you know, the obvious choice of fixing it is going to be Bitcoin. That's what will happen. But so I don't know, y'all, does that kind of answer your question, give you a sense of?
Yes, sure. Yeah, 100%.
Funny, I had a quick conversation today with Ann Hans on Twitter. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but he was of the mind that fiat is never going to die, and that it's going to be around forever. Bitcoin is not the antidote to and, you know, my side of that argument was that it really just, I stole from Jeff Booth, is that we live in an age of technological induced deflationary progress, and fiat is incapable or incompatible with that paradigm. It's just, it's going to break no matter what because of the advances of technology and the deflation that it creates. And even if Bitcoin doesn't kill fiat, I feel like it's just a better fit for that paradigm. And I don't know. I don't know how many Bitcoiners out there think fiat is never going to die, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I'm with you, Greg.
Before you go, what's his definition of fiat, though? Like, backed by nothing?
He just said fiat.
Well, yeah, fiat. Yeah, backed by nothing, or you know, really a currency that's a currency by state decree. Very, you know, take the dollar as the perfect, you know, example. I'm with you, Greg. I think it's mathematical. I think fiat is going to die. Now, that's not to say the dollar is going to die immediately. I mean, the dollar could still be a payment mechanism, but the dollar as a savings device is already dying. And I think it's only going to get substantially worse. And, you know, hopefully eventually we'll get a new government and, you know, new people in the government, and they will put us on a Bitcoin standard as opposed to the dollar standard, but they could exist in parallel for some period of time. So to people who say that, you know, fiat's not going to die tomorrow, they're right. I mean, fiat's going to be, it could be around for some time, but it's in the process of dying. I mean, the, you know, from 71 to present, the dollar's lost 97% of its purchasing power. So that last 3% could take a bit longer and probably will. But it's dying. And Greg, you're right. It's mathematical. It's Jeff's argument. We live in a deflationary world. We need a deflationary currency. And more importantly, it'll die because when people's savings are worthless and they've been wiped out as a result of the currency collapse, the way people were in Venezuela or Weimar or Zimbabwe or any notable hyperinflation, there have been 100 of them in the past 150 years, they're going to demand that they're not going to accept any new currency that doesn't have, you know, that it isn't limited in supply in some way. I mean, that's why I say that, you know, one has to own assets, financial assets, that the government can't print. And so the, you know, the three natural assets that fit that model are Bitcoin, gold, and silver. So.
Yes, Rusty.
Yeah, I did have a serious question for Lawrence today. And I went down the rabbit hole of the Wizard of Oz and the connections that the Wizard of Oz had with the gold standard, the Yellow Brick Road. Originally, yeah. It was like the silver slippers, the ruby slippers that they changed it to. But that, so, and then there was a movement in like the 1870s or something like that where it was the free silver movement. I'm sure you know all the history, and I just want to, and I started seeing connections between what the free silver movement did and then similarities with that with what the Bitcoin movement is. Like, it was money for the people, and then there was politicians that ran on a free silver movement, but at the same time we're talking about very different assets as well. I just wanted to get your thoughts if you've ever thought about it.
Yeah, I have a lot. So definitely The Wizard of Oz was written by Frank Baum, and it was about the monetary wars of the time period in the late 1800s. And it was William Jennings Bryan said, you know, the farmers were getting killed on, you know, with their debts. And they were saying, you know, we're not going to crucify, you know, the American farmer on a cross of gold. And they wanted, you know, free silver, and they wanted more silver to be distributed. It's interesting, though. It's a little complicated because they were actually arguing more for inflation rather than the sound money that we're arguing for with gold. I mean, and back at that time period, we were very definitely on a gold standard, which, you know, quote unquote, kept the system honest. But the New York bankers and others had figured out ways to, you know, that once the Federal Reserve got created, and even before the Federal Reserve got created, the banks, through fractional reserve lending, you know, had figured out ways. I mean, if you get somebody in debt to you, you basically own them. You kind of control them. I mean, this is what the IMF does. This is what banks do. This, you know, what everybody does. And so, you know, the notion of a debt-based society where everybody has to borrow to get what they need, and you've got to continually grow the money supply and grow the economy with debt, it's a bad model. And this has recurred throughout history over and over and over again. In fact, you know, all the way back to the Bible, I mean, you see that, you know, there would be every 50 years, there would be a debt jubilee because the debtors would get to the stage where they just couldn't they couldn't pay the debts anymore. And this is why some religions actually view, you know, interest as being, you know, against the, you know, Sharia or against the law. But it's, you know, it's complicated, and the echoes throughout history, they're a little different in every instance. But, you know, the notion of the banks against the people and the notion of, you know, the people being in debt, you know, it's a trap. It's definitely a trap. And but if you have an asset that you know is going to appreciate in real terms, that's your exit. And, you know, Bitcoin's actually the first asset that we really know with great certainty is going to appreciate in real terms, you know, over a longer time frame. I mean, you know, gold did that for a while. The problem with gold is it's too hard to move, store, verify, and the governments have gotten very, very good and really have devised means of making sure that, you know, it doesn't act as a canary in the coal mine for their monetary printing. I mean, I find it funny. I've used this number a lot. Most people don't know it. A lot of people say there's a ton of monetary premium in gold and Bitcoin's going to steal that. And I would say Bitcoin will replace gold, no doubt. But there's not that much monetary premium in gold because if one goes back into the post-World War II area, Bretton Woods was 44, summer of 44, and looks at gold and how much gold the U.S. had and divides the monetary base by gold. I mean, we were kind of on a gold standard, right? And even as late as 71, you could do that calculation and you came out somewhere close to the $35 an ounce reference price. To show you how much money has been printed today, if you took today's base monetary aggregate and divided it by the ounces of gold that the United States owns, the U.S. Treasury owns, 261 million ounces, 8,133 tons, you'd come up with a number of $80,000 per ounce of gold. And gold's now trading for $2,000 an ounce. So it gives you a sense of the order of magnitude of how much paper has been created against how much gold, you know, we actually hold. So, you know, and how is that happening? If you tell people that number, they're like, how can that possibly be? And it's because they've defanged gold. They've basically taken it out of, you know, they've demonized it. It wasn't even legal for Americans to hold it until 1974. And, you know, they've taken it out of finance, you know, and as a result of that, it has not held on to any kind of monetary premium. The $2,000, the average cost to pull an ounce of gold out of the ground is about $1,300. So it means you're making $700 of profit for each ounce that you mine if you're running a gold mine. That's $700. You've got to use that to find another ounce for the one you just mined because, you know, you can't replace it. I mean, once you mine it, it's gone. And you've got to spend capex to build the, you know, to expand or build the mines as you go forward. So there's not a lot of premium in gold. It's been forgotten. And it will probably to a degree stay that way, except insofar as there's a lot of history of central banks hoarding it. And one of the things that's very interesting is it's actually held its value reasonably well. Investors are selling gold, they're buying Bitcoin, but central banks are buying gold. And I think the reason for that is that central banks can see what's going on. And they're all saying to themselves, particularly China, India, and the Middle East, and some other places, Turkey, you know, they're all saying to themselves, huh, you know, we got a monetary reset coming here. I mean, look, the U.S. government's fiscal position is an unmitigated disaster. I mean, it's so bankrupt. It's such a train wreck. You know, here we are at full employment. We're running $2 trillion deficits, and soon there'll be three. And they can't go back. I mean, interest rates are soaking up, you know, $1 trillion of interest expense. I mean, you go look at the chart of that, it's going straight vertical. And so it's, you know, I mean, that's one thing I would say. A lot of people ask me, what's the timing on all this, Larry? We're in the end game here. I mean, you know, when do we have hyper Bitcoinization and full hyperinflation? Probably not until the early 2030s, you know, 6-7 years out. But we're in it now. I mean, it kind of started in 2000. Then, because in gold, the price of gold in 2000 was $250. The price of gold today is $2,000. You know, and 2008 was the first, you know, big print. 2020 was the next big print, and you just know there's another one coming, and there's another one after that, and another one after that. And the currency fails. The dollar currency fails when everyone knows they'll never stop. I mean, I know that. You know that. Probably most everybody listening to this talk knows that, and that's why we place the bets the way we place them, because we know that, you know, the monetary policy will be to inflate forever and will only get worse. Problem is, if you look at it, you know, the size of the country, you look at all the people out there, I think the number of people who know and fully understand that, it's not even 10% yet. But it's going to become clearer over time. I mean, you've now got everybody very much aware that inflation is a big issue, right? Because we just had huge inflation. So and the next wave will make it even a bigger issue. And then the wave after that, even bigger still. So you can kind of see where we're going, right?
Yeah, it looks like Rusty wanted to chime in on some of those points there. Rusty, what's up?
Yeah. Back to the history lesson. Where during the whole metal, the standard and the buy metal standard and all that kind of argument, they ended up having the ratio of gold to silver where just by decree, I assume the government said this is how much silver you need to buy gold. What stops then the government from doing that again with Bitcoin and gold, for instance, and say, hey, or gold or Bitcoin and fiat or something, say this is by decree the, you know, the ratio of this other thing, this like gold or fiat or something to every unit of Bitcoin. I'm trying to get my head around that.
Yeah, well, they could try and do that, but the free market in Bitcoin is going to set whatever the price is based on what the free market determines, not what ratio they come up with. I mean, the ratio of gold to silver historically in terms of the Earth's crust, they're about 16 ounces of silver for every ounce of gold in the crust of the Earth. And for a long time, that was used kind of as the ratio. When we were on a gold and silver standard, that ratio was kind of applied. Since that time, ironically, it's gone in favor of gold. Banks and jewelry demand for gold have held the price of gold up relative to the price of silver. So that ratio now is closer to 80 to 1, which in my opinion makes silver a screaming bargain. The other thing is in silver's favor, I mean, look, gold has uses, a few industrial uses, very few, but in really high-tech situations, it gets used. It's in rockets and certain things. But silver gets used quite a bit. It's the cheapest for its conductivity. It's the cheapest metal out there. But every ounce of gold we have in the world is still sitting in some vault or it's around a woman's neck. Whereas silver, we use it all year. I mean, now, there's some tea sets out there that are getting melted down, but they're not that many. And so, and there's a huge demand for silver because it gets used in solar panels. So, my opinion is when the next up leg starts in these metals, and then, when the next leg of monetary debasement starts, as we all know, Bitcoin's going to 150 to 500, gold's probably going to 3,000, and silver, which is now at 20, is probably going to 100. And the reason for the silver price move that's being so dramatic is that there's no inventory. And yet it's needed in a lot of places. So, they'll all move at slightly different speeds, but they're all gonna go up because the government can't print them.
Larry, you mentioned debt as a trap earlier this evening, and I think what a lot of people don't really get about a debt-based system as with regards to it being a trap is that when you're using it, it can give you the illusion of prosperity, right? So
Oh, God.
you're pulling forward all that value when you use debt. What is the end game of the trap look like with the global economy? Like what is happening right now with global debt, and then with what we know is coming with prints, what are you looking for to know? I know you said we're in the end game. What are you looking for to know when shit's really hitting the fan?
Yeah, well, something will break. I mean, we already had a little bit of that earlier this year in Silicon Valley and the other banks failing in March, but they papered it over. And just as an aside, one thing I heard today that was very interesting. I talked to a knowledgeable Washington insider who told me that he thinks they're in the process of working up some kind of a commercial real estate trust. They know they've got a problem with the CRE loans. And so they're trying to put something together. It would be like the Resolution Trust. And maybe if a bank has a bad commercial real estate loan, they could sell it to that trust at 100 cents on the dollar or 90 cents on the dollar, and it would take over the property and try and work it out. I mean, it's backdoor QE, it's backdoor printing, but it's another way of shoving money into the
Like a
system. But
repo facility.
yeah, something like that. I mean, that's the other thing they did, that it was very quiet. Most people didn't pick up on it, but it was really a big deal. The Fed recently came out and said, we're making the standard repo facility permanent. It's always there and we want you to use it. Yeah, standing repo facility. So, Greg, the answer to your question is something will break. The bond market will break. I mean, it kind of almost broke last fall when the 10-year went close to 5%. And you saw all these Fed people coming out and saying, no, we're going to cut rates. And so they bought themselves some more time. I mean, they control the narrative, and that makes it difficult for all of us. And so, it's going to be, I mean, I watch the bond market carefully. I watch the price of Bitcoin carefully. I mean, Bitcoin is the real fire alarm to me. It moves the fastest, it moves the hardest. It's the number one indicator of liquidity, even more than the NASDAQ and NVIDIA, in my opinion. So Bitcoin's probably the first thing I look at. Then I look at the price of gold. Then I look at the 10-year rate. But I think what'll happen is they're going to lose the bond market. People are going to realize that inflation is not something that's contained. It's in fact, still there and probably over time getting worse. I think the dollar is going to continue to slide against a lot of foreign currencies because we're the most mismanaged country in the world, even though the dollar is the reserve currency.
I would disagree with that point, but
Okay. I think it's going to slide. I'll tell you what. And when it does, that's going to shove the price of oil up. And when the price of oil goes up, then we're going to have more inflation. When we have more inflation, more people are going to bail out of the bond market. And so eventually the Fed, in my opinion, is going to be forced into either buying its own bonds or yield curve control. And that's kind of third world banana republic stuff, which typically has never happened in a company that or country that's got the reserve currency. But we're about to find out what happens when it happens. And again, you know, this is all about confidence, right? I mean, you know, if everybody realizes that they can never stop printing and that the price of everything is going to go up forever, you're going to trend toward the kind of behavior that you had in Weimar, which was people would get paid and they would literally take the money they had been paid and run to the grocery store to try and buy the food or whatever it was they needed before it went up, because they know that 2 days later it would cost more, you know. And that's it's called a crack up boom, and that's what happens when, you know, when the money is no good. You just don't want to hold the money. Now, you might need dollars to pay for things because people aren't used to getting paid in Bitcoin yet. They don't, you know, they don't have a Lightning wallet and they can't take a Lightning transfer. But I mean, that'll change too. But you know, I think that's what's going to happen, right? People are going to realize the money is no damn good, and they're going to move out of the money. So you're going to see the bond market collapse, and then you're going to see the government step in to address the bond market collapse. And what's that stepping in going to look like? You know, Burr. I mean, there's no other solution. I mean, they could not step in. They could say, oh, we're going to, you know, they could pretend to be what Jay Powell is pretending to be, which is Paul Volcker. Say, oh, we're going to raise rates and have real positive real rates. Well, good luck with that. The whole country will go bankrupt. I mean, you know,
is this why Boris bankrupt. Johnson? Yeah. Is this why Boris Johnson is asking for Bitcoin and gold instead of exactly. instead of he's like no pound sterling?
Yeah, he's no fool. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, right? I mean, it's yeah, it's on everybody's tongue. I mean, hey, we orange pilled Larry Fink. I mean, he hated it 2 years ago, and now he realizes he can make money off it, and he gets it. You know, it's just a matter of time. Everybody's going to get it. I mean, you guys have all read Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point, right? I mean, he's got a great chart in there that shows how, you know, cell phones, cars, I don't know, any innovation, refrigerators, any new development, right, in society comes along, takes a while to get kind of perfected and cost effective. And at some point, 10% of the population knows about it, right? And then, boom, it takes off. And in the same time it took to get to 10%, you go from 10 to 90. And I don't know if we're quite at 10% in Bitcoin yet, but it feels like we're pretty close. And, you know, and it took us 15 years to get here. I'm guessing in 15 years, we're on a Bitcoin standard, you know, probably pretty certainly. I mean, and between here and there, it's going to be a whole lot of fun for all of us. Because
have you been seeing that that Jeff Bezos has been selling his stock like crazy? You think?
Oh, absolutely.
You think him and Zuckerberg are doing what Saylor's doing right now?
It's very possible. You know, I read that today that he's friends with Saylor. I'd be shocked. Yeah.
Right. Did you see that Saylor was like out at some island?
He was at his party. Yeah.
He was at some birthday party.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, with Bezos and his wife.
Yeah, you know Saylor's got to be working Orange Pillum. I don't know about Zuckerberg. I don't know anything about him. But I mean, look, they're getting it everywhere. I was just at the Satoshi Roundtable thing over in Dubai for almost a week. And, you know, I've got a picture there, which I wasn't supposed to take, but I did, of, you know, like 10 Saudi sheikhs or, you know, Middle Eastern sheikhs sitting at a table, you know, listening intently to presentations about Bitcoin, right? I mean, these people have more money than God. And, you know, they're very interested in Bitcoin. And so, you know, it's just the world's waking up to it. And we all think, you know, it's been a long time. It's been slow. It's taken forever and blah, blah, blah. But you got to remember how, you know, this is where when people say we're early, we really are early. I mean, I was
wait, how much money does God have? Do we need to get on the phone to him?
He owns all our souls. So I guess he's got a whole lot. Yeah. You know, I mean, I was in the internet in 93 and 4. I was buying private internet companies. And this reminds me very much of the same thing. And, you know, so, I mean, it was kind of 95. You had your first browser with, you know, Netscape and you know, you had some IPOs and stuff and 97 and 8. But you were still dial-up modems. It was clunky. And, you know, it was, I mean, before 95, it was green screen, right? You didn't even have you didn't even have anything that looked like Windows. And, you know, I'm guessing we're in 97 or 8, maybe 9. And then 2000 really, you know, that whole, you know, the dot-com bubble ran from kind of 96, 97 all the way up to 2000. And then, you know, we had a lot of silly ideas like pets.com that got flushed out and it was a correction. But, you know, throughout all of that, you know, Amazon grew like crazy for the next 10, 20 years. And, you know, and so we're kind of in the same stage of the Bitcoin development, in my opinion. You know, we've had a nice, you know, it's on everybody's radar screen now. Everybody knows what it is. But, you know, it's still the adoption's relatively low. And but that's changing quickly. I mean, you've now got, you know, all these ETFs that, you know, so all there's between 40 trillion and 100 trillion of RIA money. And, you know, and there's nothing like performance that'll make somebody, you know, I mean, if you know, I mean, people ask me about Bitcoin, I say, do you know what it did last year? Are you aware it was up 150% last year? People are like, what? Yeah, it was up 150% in calendar 2023. Don't you think you ought to own a little bit of it? Well, yeah, maybe I should. Well, you know, before, and they have a financial advisor, they call it financial advisor, you know, he's not going to go buy a Trezor and put it in cold storage. He's not smart enough to know what GBTC is and that it's at a discount, and this, which was really your only publicly traded way, well, other than Sailor and MicroStrategy, but, you know, to get a hold of it. And so, but now we can just, you know, one click, you can say, fine, you know, I mean, yeah, you've been, you know, I know your client, I know you're curious about Bitcoin. You'll be happy to know we took a 3% weighting in your account. So you've got some Bitcoin now. Oh, good. Thank you. You know, and then a year later, that 3% will be 9 because it went up 3x. And the client will be saying, hey, how come we didn't put more in that? You know, it seems like it's really working, right? I mean, and I mean, this is how it goes, right? I mean, it's like finding, I mean, I have great regret. I bought Microsoft on the public offering in 1985. It was trading at 14 times earnings. It was growing 40% a year, right? And I made two or three times my money on it. And I needed to buy a condominium because I needed a place to live. So I sold it, right? Yeah, that was not the right move. Right.
Well, you needed a place to live, so that's.
I did need a place to live, and you know, I needed a down payment, and there it was. So, but the point is that, you know, I mean, it's got Microsoft-like capability, it's got Amazon-like capability, it's got, you know, it's a network-based thing, and the network's just getting larger and larger and larger, and as we all know, it's as Sailor says, it's going up forever, Laura. It really is. I mean, so. I mean, yes. I know it sounds nutty when we talk about $1 million a coin, but I'm so absolutely certain we get there that
yeah,
it's got no doubt about it. I'm not sure of the timing, but we'll get there.
It's wild because, you know, one of the biggest arguments against Bitcoin is its volatility, right? And it's like people don't understand how volatile Amazon was.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, its Bill first Miller 20 had years.
Yeah, right. There were first three 20 years of over 50%, right?
Yeah, and it went down through every single year. Its first 20 years of a drawdown, double digit drawdown.
Exactly.
Like, that's what people don't understand. It's like, so would you have not bought into Amazon just because it was volatile? You know, like, what are the real fundamentals behind it? And I think that's what people don't understand is it plays on both sides, right? Because the volatility, it's volatile to the upside.
Right. That's exactly and, right.
Yeah. And when it hits point one million, you know, like.
What kind of car is that, man? It looks bigger now.
He's in his office.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in his mobile home.
Yes, exactly.
It's a what van?
I just moved to the back of the mobile home.
Okay.
Exactly.
So you know, look, it's we're all pretty lucky to be here, and it's really fun watching this. I mean, the other thing I was at this Cato Institute event. It was so negative. Everyone, you know, blue, red, they're all sniping at each other. I mean, everyone's just so depressed. And I was like, and I just stood up. I said, guys, I know an area where everybody's happy. And they're like, what? And I said, Bitcoin. I said, come join us. I mean, it's like, we got all these happy warriors. We're all positive. We know this thing's going to work. We know, I mean, you want to get your optimism back. You know, get out of this old world paradigm of thinking you're going to change the world by voting for blue or red and come over here to Sound Money and vote with your feet on this thing. And you know, you're going to love it. I mean, you're going to get richer. You're not going to sweat it so much. You know, I mean, what this thing is going to do. It's such a great, what it's going to do. It's going to solve so many problems. So, and once you come to understand that, it, to me anyway, in a world that's pretty broken in a lot of ways, it's such a beacon of hope, you know. I mean, this is, and Jeff Booth gets that and does a nice job of explaining it, you know. So
well, we might fight each other in Twitter a little bit, but like, we're hopeful, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I was about to say there's a correction there, like we're positive 60% of the time all of the time. That's how that meme goes.
Yellow made a rule that we had to fight on Twitter, and so we took it too seriously.
Yeah.
It's human nature to fight, and certainly there are things worth fighting for. But the point is, in general, I think people in this community, can see that this is the solution, feel strongly about it. And I know from my point of view anyway, are very optimistic about what it'll do and the direction that we're going. I mean, it's, and I, so when I see people in the old paradigm fighting over stupid shit, you know, I try to say, to suggest to them that they look at this new area, because once they do, I think they become much more optimistic. I know it's certainly done that for me.
Now, Larry, I know you talked about possibly being on a Bitcoin standard as this changes off, and I know that there are going to be...
There's the dog, by the way. Come here, sweetie.
There are going to be people talking about how, you know, the U.S. is in decline and China is going to be taking over. It's the new world currency, new hegemon. But
yeah,
I wanted to share some charts that might change the opinions of those folks, because this is the thing that started this process, and I wanted to bring it up in front and see what you might think. So, like, we talked about debt being able to show that, like, yeah, you're more prosperous than you actually are. Can you guys see this private debt to GDP?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So you've got, you know, the U.S.
That's nice.
50%, and you got China going up through the roof. Now, this is 2010 to, I think, close to 2020. And they're a consumption-based economy, similar to a lot of markets, and that's going to be heavily based on the your ability for your people in their consuming years to actually purchase products. And this, if you look at like the 1985 level, that's when like the one-child policy started being enacted. So their entire consumption base, these yellow lines that they reported as incorrect a few years ago, like the pyramid is just shrinking down. They're not going to be able to support the economic activity.
Right.
And then on top of that, if you look at what their total private credit looks like now, so the other one was the 2010 chart. Wow. This is as of 2020.
Is that some of your TA over the top?
Yeah, it looks like we're getting
yellow's helping.
I was going to say yellow's got control of the screen. Go yellow.
I didn't want to talk about the fiat system imploding without showing a snapshot of what everybody's usage are and what those fiat facades and debt facades might look like. Wow, this is getting out of hand. All right. But I didn't know if you'd seen any of that before, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it before we lose you.
Well, look, I mean, yeah, China's got the same problem we've got in terms of a debt bubble, and it's collapsing right now. I mean, you know, I don't think China's going to take over the world. I really don't. I mean, I think they built a hell of a manufacturing base out of nothing. But I think, you know, the political system is no better than ours. And I would think actually quite, you know, in some ways worse. You know, good industrial policy, but not so good for the people. And my sense is that, you know, we're going to move into a world where these big nation states aren't necessarily going to have as much power as they used to have, and aren't going to necessarily be as important as they used to be. I mean, peak centralization was World War II, where we figured out how to kill 50 million people in 10 years. We're moving towards a more decentralized world, and I think that's a really good thing. I think the internet has done that. I think Bitcoin will continue to do that. And I think that, you know, the trend will be for more open borders, smaller countries, smaller governing groups, et cetera. So, you know, if we can avoid, if this monetary crack up that we're talking about happening, if we can avoid getting into a shooting war, which I think we can, because I think enough people around the world widely know that, you know, the next one would be the last one, especially if nuclear stuff starts to get used, then we can, I think, return to some sense of sanity. And I don't think the younger generations, you know, really want to pay for war, or really want to be involved in wars. And so, you know, I think it'll become a much safer and more pleasant world as the changes that we've seen kind of filter through society, you know. And I don't worry about China as a competitor at all. I really don't. I mean, I've been to China a couple of times. I mean, what I found interesting is how much they admire and kind of want to be the United States. I mean, they're not, you know, and honestly, I don't worry that much about Russia either. I think that, I think most people just want to live their lives and raise their kids and, you know, have prosperity. And I think these large government bodies, you know, they can do a lot of damage and a lot of evil. But, you know, I think that the power is shifting because, you know, we've all got an ability to communicate with one over the internet. And so a lot of the old power structures is imploding on itself because it overreached. You know, so I mean, the federal government's a perfect example of that. I mean, there's going to have to be a major restructuring slash reform of the U.S. federal government in the next 15 years. It's bankrupt. It's completely bankrupt. You know,
would you say that the government needs to do a reach around? Is that something you would?
Well, I don't know about that. No, I think it just needs to collapse. I mean, I think.
Oh, okay.
And I think it will collapse because it won't have the money. You know, nobody will take it seriously anymore. And then you'll see kind of grounds up, you know, you'll see states doing their own thing and cities doing their own thing. I mean, it's, you know, what do we really need a government for? I mean, to me, the only function of government, the only reason I think we could all agree we want this is to have some sense of law and order, you know, to have some police forces. I mean, you know, we want criminals to be caught and put in jail, right? But other than that, you know, what should the government be doing? And my answer is kind of nothing. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And I think that's what we'll kind of evolve toward over time, you know, but it's going to take time. I mean, it does, sadly.
But who is going to build the roads?
They'll get done privately. You know, there'll be tolls or whatever. I mean, it's.
No, that's not true. There were no roads before government. Come on. We all know.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rope has been in my ear for the last couple of minutes about wanting to do the RD question. So I'm going to let him roll with it.
That's categorically false. Actually, World of Rusty was telling me to get you to pick him. So go ahead, Rusty.
It's not true. I feel like I've been talking way too much, contributing far too much to this podcast. I suggest Pedro maybe would be the one to go with.
Pedro would be a good
one. Pedro, if you want to take it away.
Pedro, go ahead. Yeah.
Pedro?
Okay, guys, Pedro here. Let me check my notes here.
That's
the meme factory did exist. Which one of us would you like? Which one of us would you retweet? Which one of us would you mute? And which one of us would you zap? And just remember, I have super nice hair.
That's all that learned.
Surprised Pedro didn't pull the plug on the
episode. Yeah.
The question, Larry.
that was aimed at me?
That was aimed at you.
Oh, gosh. Question. I don't know. I like all you guys. I mean, I would retweet all you guys. I mean, I think yellow. I think yellow is
not allowed. I'm not allowed. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
You don't get to
choose.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I got to be nice to Big Sean because I'm about to go to his having party. So I want him to like me. And I don't know. That's I like I've done it for a long time. I like Becca. I like all you guys. Right. I don't know. Where
Come on. Stop
right?
being a boomer. Just pick three.
You were so close there. So let's go. Let's help you along with this. So Sean, you're saying that's a like? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he said.
Okay, well, okay. Retweet. Mm-hmm. Who would you? Which one of the Meme Factory members would you retweet? Let's do this.
Greg.
Oh, Greg.
That's shit. Nice. Wow. And then the trickiest one, because I know you're too nice. Which one of us would you mute, Lawrence?
I wouldn't mute any of you guys. No, yeah.
God damn it. Which one of us would you mute?
All right. You know what? Because he's already on mute. He's not participating. I'd mute Pedro. I don't even know Pedro.
Right? Fuck you, Pedro.
I don't want to do that because it looks like he's muted himself. That's all. Yeah.
All right. So we got the like, the retweet, the mute, and the zap. Who are you Nostra zapping? Who are you sending some money to?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'd probably send it to Rusty because he's you know, asked a lot of smart questions, so contributed a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he bought your NFT, I'll send you a yellow plushie. Some money.
Yeah. you are buying a yellow plushie off me today, so.
Well, that's true. Actually, yeah. Me. Yeah, and I'm gonna buy a yellow doll from you, so.
Let's go.
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll have some collection value. Plus,
wash your hair.
Pretty funny, yeah.
Were you talking to your daughter, or were you talking to Larry with the wash your hair comment?
Someone mute Rope.
Oh, y'all heard that? Y'all heard that? I'm sorry. Yeah. She doesn't want to bathe. I don't know where she gets that from. It's just like the weirdest thing.
Shocker.
I actually kind of like it because it keeps all the little boys away from her, so I'm cool with that.
Like father, like daughter, right?
Hey, that's confidential information.
All right, I am going to pass this over to Sean to chat about the having party.
All right.
Larry, we know you're coming to the having party, and we're excited to have you.
Thank you.
And it's not just me.
I'm bringing all my sports shirts, Sean.
Let's go. We're going to get some good workouts in the morning.
Yeah, I'm psyched for that. Yeah, I'll bring my CrossFit gear for sure.
Yep, and it's going to be a fun time. We're going to have some good panels that we'll have you join in on. And
sounds like fun, yeah.
Yeah, and we need to get you scheduled for the helicopter ride. So.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw Max going out to a helicopter recently on Twitter somewhere. It looked like he was.
Yeah, these guys, I'll hook it up with you. These guys there, they actually had Samson. Mal was flying on their helicopter, so it's pretty cool. So
yeah, it sounds pretty cool. I'm really looking forward to seeing the country. I've heard so much about it. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great time, and you know, just come down, enjoy it, enjoy the magic of El Salvador, and you know, it'll be fun to experience it now, and then you'll probably be back in a year, a couple of years.
Yeah, no doubt. No, it's it really. I'm really excited about it, so it'll be fun.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So we're excited and we're pumped. And we actually got a new sponsor from Amber App, so nice. You know, it's pretty cool to see how it's growing, and we can't wait. So we'll see you down there.
Absolutely, look forward to it.
All right. Okay. And Larry, if you could take a second to tell anybody who's listening or watching where they could find you and find your content.
Oh yeah, so the EMA2 EdwardMarkAlpha2.com is the website of my company called Equity Management Associates. I write a quarterly letter that's kind of a macro letter that more or less makes the case for why monetary debasement is just a certainty. It's free. You can put your email in there. We won't spam you. But you can also read the last 20 of them because they're archived there. And then I try and put some of my video stuff up there as well. So, and I'm involved with two funds, the gold fund, which is now 80% gold, 20% Bitcoin. And then there's another fund called the Bitcoin Opportunity Fund that my partner David Foley and James Lavish run. And that's focused exclusively on Bitcoin related things. And they just closed that and it's doing pretty well. So you can find out more information about those on that website. So,
Lawrence, can you confirm that if I send you my email address, I will not lose access to my Twitter account?
Yeah, I can. I can. Don't fall for that 2FA trick that I fell for. I'm a moron. I mean, it's just
okay.
Yeah, but yes, and don't. Yeah, I got so there were a lot of really funny replies, like, you know, hey, how come you didn't send me the 10 Bitcoin you promised me? And you know, I clicked on that airdrop. You know, where the hell did all my coins go?
Oh, shit.
A lot of good shit. I mean, people have a great sense of humor, and it's. But it's not funny. I mean, you know, the bigger picture thing, I mean, this SIM swap thing is a real issue. And Preston has talked about this too. I mean, apparently there's corruption within some of these cell phone companies. And, you know, if you're high profile, you can get SIM swapped. And, you know, I have no economic interest in it, but I've signed up for a service called Efani that some people listening might be familiar with, EFANI, which is a SIM swap protection service. Comes very highly recommended. I just signed up for it. Nice. You know, you don't want to get SIM swapped. You really don't. It'll mess up a lot, you know, from a security point of view. So,
all right.
So that's that. But yeah, and you know, I'm very active on Twitter, probably too active, and I hate central bankers. But they're, you know, they're great foils. I mean, they're just so friggin' stupid. It's just so easy to, you know, to take shots at them. I mean, I mean, we're lucky that we have the Andrew Ross Sorkins of the world on the other side. Cause he's they really are. They're just incredibly dumb, yeah. You know, and they leave track record. I mean, everything they say is going to be archived, and, you know, we're going to be able to, you know.
We're going
to
make memes out of them.
Exactly.
Exactly. I mean,
you think they're salty now? Wait until we get to $1 million Bitcoin, you know.
Later next year?
Yeah, my prediction on a million is kind of, I don't think this halving will get us there. I think this halving will get us to 2 to 5 100K. And then we'll correct probably back to half of that, maybe. I don't think the corrections are going to be as deep in the future. The 70, 80% pullback shit, I think that's gone. But I could easily see us coming back 50%. And then the next run off of the next halving, or maybe even before it, I think that one takes us over a million. Yeah.
That's the hockey stick move.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, and it does depend a lot on what the other side does. I mean, it depends on how many things break and how desperate the U.S. federal government gets. I mean, that's the piece that we can't really predict. I mean, you know, we think, oh, this Bitcoin worked naturally because it was destined to work. True. But, you know, when COVID came along and they took the Fed balance sheet from 3 to 9, you know, that was a hell of an accelerant, right? I mean, you know, I mean, let's face it. You know, that made our case for us. And in my opinion, the next print is going to take us from, you know, we were at 9, we're now back to 7 something, high 7s. I think the next print will take us to 15 on the Fed balance sheet, you know, maybe more, 15 trillion. They're going to have to just print a ton of money. It's just, their eyes are going to bleed with how much money they're going to print. And at that point in time, the inflation will come back and, you know, blah, 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 be the same cycle, only worse. And more people will come to realize it. And that's what will drive Bitcoin from, you know, 100 to a million. You
know, yeah.
That's what's
seems kind of like how Preston said the contractions before a woman gives birth.
That's exactly what it's like.
Faster and stronger.
Faster and stronger. Yeah. And that's what's happening. I think that's a very good analogy. And that is what's happening. And so, you know, I mean, it's, look, the ups and downs are no fun. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are feeling kind of nervous at 15. I mean, I noticed a distinct change in Saylor's tone in his interviews, you know, when we crossed back over his average cost. I mean, I guess, I think even he was probably sweating it just a tad when we were at 15.
Just a tad.
But you know, it's, I mean, number go up. And, you know, it's, I mean, this, I mean, you've all seen the chart on how much gold went up when the gold ETF was established. Gold ETF was established in 2004. And, you know, the demand for gold just went up enormously when that got put into place. And gold went from 250 in 2000 roughly to 1900 in 2011. So that, you know, that was a big friggin' move. And so here you've got a chance with gold 2.0 Bitcoin. Same story, right? You know, Bitcoin's at 40 or something when, you know, the ETFs come around. I mean, I you know, this will be at 300-400, you know, a few years out in my view. So it's coming. So it's all good.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time tonight, Larry.
Oh, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. I enjoyed talking to you guys, and you know, I wouldn't mute any of you, right?
It's too late for that.
That was the hardest question you asked me all night, right?
Yeah.
I like chatting with all of you. So happy.